podcast uses profanity and topics may be disturbing for some listeners. Listen at your own risk. Welcome to Hell on His Podcast. I'm Bryce.
I'm Amanda.
And welcome back.
Hi.
Hello.
I feel like it's been a while. We've been doing
it stuff. Has. We've been busy.
Yeah.
We've done been busy.
We've life
and stuff. I've taken to starting to text Amanda all of the Podfather updates so that I don't forget them, because he normally calls me or I call him and I go, what is your bitching about? You know? let me see. What did we have? He told us we were ridiculous. How dare we call him annoying? Amanda has to get her mind out of the gutter and she needs to get her shit together. And oh, that's right. My dad tries to tell me when things are off the record, and he doesn't realize that that's not how this works.
Nothing's off the record.
There's nothing off the record. Mill tried it, and guess what? I still told the story of her flipping herself off in the mirror.
We're not journalists. We're not professional.
No. Sorry, Dad. I don't have any journalistic...
anything.
No.
We're not good at this.
We're good at the stories. We can do the stories. But it's the... I don't know the right word, but also I don't have a brain. I'm thinking for three guys, okay? And it's fine. Anyway, so he also told me a story.
Okay.
So I think I've mentioned my dad is coaching my little sister's football team.
Yes. If not to them, definitely to me.
Yeah, I've told Amanda at least. But I guess this was not my sister that said it, but I guess during one of the practices. Okay, so this is how this started. He told me that we needed to stop calling him old. And then he told me the story. But at one of the practices, one of the little girls told him to not let his knees buckle because he's old.
I have to start saying shit like that to and around Annie so she can be the one to start saying stuff like that to people, because that's hilarious.
Uh-huh.
And I love her parents. I have absolutely no idea who they are, or even if she has more than one, but I love them.
I'm just here relaying messages. And so, I mean, that little girl might be our hero right now.
That girl's going places.
She's going places in life, Dad. And you can't go there because your knees are going to buckle.
Hope it's not steps that she's going up.
Probably. Let's see. What else do we got? It's just me complaining, more me complaining. That's all I got. That's the update I got from my dad. So.
I mean, honestly, I didn't need anything else. That was perfect.
The other thing. We haven't done a Bash on Dash session in a while.
It's overdue.
Well overdue. I'm looking at his picture in the drive and I just see the blank stare.
It's really like. Some dogs, you know, you look at them, like mine, for example, you look at them and you're just like, not like sometimes he does smart stuff, but like not a lot going on up there. No, there's nothing. There's wind between those or behind those eyes.
All he hears is whistling, just air going from one ear to the other, you know,
It's really nothing's going on.
Right. Also, it's a Camille. It's my little sister that reminded me to do a Bash on Dash session. Now, I would like to say she did not say do a Bash on Dash session. She was telling me to knock off the Bash on Dash sessions.
No.
Which I then reminded her, you first of all initially agreed with me about Dash.
Oh.
And so, thank you for reminding me we need to do a Bash on Dash sesh.
So what changed? Why the big old heart there?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. You know what? I'll give it to Dash. He's very sweet, but there are times where I'm on the phone and he is just whiny. And I'm like, that is where my dog gets that from. And then my dad goes, well, have you met your dog? Yeah, I have. She's a little mini me of Dash. What do you think?
Yeah, like you have the right to complain. It's his fault.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so.
Only she has stuff behind her eyes.
Sometimes. Normally, the stuff behind her eyes is ball, 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 bone, ball, ball, toy, bone, ball, ball.
Now it's crib, chair, ball, bone.
She doesn't get in that room very often, so what Amanda's referring to is the baby's room. I close that door right now because I don't need them getting in there. I guess this is another thing I haven't mentioned on the podcast. I'll talk about it in a second. Genders. But Maisie, anytime we bring a new piece of furniture in, she claims it. Immediately, it's hers.
Okay, then.
So, and I send Amanda the pictures.
She didn't buy that.
Well, that glider, apparently it's hers.
Is it because it moves? Is that why she just loves it?
I think it's because Cody and I sat in it to test it out, and she was offended and had to go sit in it, and it became hers.
Literally, how dare you?
Yeah, how dare I?
What the hell are you thinking?
How dare we not?
Own furniture, please.
Why would we not let her sit on it first to decide if she liked it?
Why would you not just immediately assume that it's hers?
I'll post that picture, but the point is she did claim that real quick. For real. The night we got it, she was like, mine. So, had to spray that down with some stain protectant, upholstery protectant stuff. I don't know.
Thanks, peons.
Yeah. Anyways, but yeah, by the way, guys, I have genders of le bebes. When we are recording, I've had genders for quite some time. I've had the genders because we did the genetic testing, which I didn't know how accurate it was. Apparently, it's very accurate, you guys.
Yeah, that's what I had heard, but I did not have twins.
It was so. For twins is where I wasn't sure if it was accurate. Apparently, it's very accurate.
It's still accurate? How do they know whose is whose? Yeah.
So let me just tell you how this works, okay? Because I let Mill come to the ultrasound, the anatomy scan with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so the tech, I lied through my teeth. I'm sorry to that poor ultrasound tech. She's like, you did the gender results? Or did you do the genetic testing? I was like, yeah. She's like, so you know the genders? Nope, I don't know the genders. Lied right through my teeth. Nope, you didn't get those.
she wouldn't tell you?
No, it was so that she would tell us.
Okay.
Because she was like, oh, so do you want the genders? Yep, we want the genders. It was so that she's the one that broke Camille's heart.
Oh, okay. So, that makes sense.
But she gets on, she finds the first one, and she goes, oh, look, baby boy won. And Camille hears this, and fingers are crossed. She's got all of her toes, everything crossed. She wants a girl so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just sitting there like, oh boy, let's hope those genetic results are not accurate for twins. Anyways. So she's sitting there, fingers crossed, legs crossed. Everything she can cross is crossed. Waiting, and it takes forever to get to the second one because it's like checking all the heart and the brain and all that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
When she gets to the second one, she's like, it's a boy. You just see Camille and be like, dang.
Oh, God, love her.
So I bought her a sweatshirt that says Boy Aunt, and it's got little dinosaurs on it. It's really cute. And I gave that to her, but
did she love it?
She did.
So she's proud. She's getting around to being.
She came around pretty quick. I think it was just that initial disappointment. Like, dang. Really hoping. Sorry.
Well, dang, but I've still got nephews on the way.
Yeah. Like, she loves her nephews, but... Anyways, so... Two boys, guys. It's two little boys. We've already got... We think we have names picked out, but those are secret.
I know, but I'm not telling.
Well, I mean, they're a secret from everyone but you and my mom.
Yeah. Suckers.
Part of it is because we're not, like, sold on the names yet. Like, we're still kind of hit and miss. So, anyways, that's fine. I think that's all I've got for updates.
Do I have updates?
I don't know. Do you have updates? You had surgery.
I did have surgery.
We haven't recorded since then.
Oh, I have surgery. I've got two buttholes. So only one's supposed to be there, but yeah, there we
go. She's got a designer one right now.
Paid a good amount for it. It's a pain in the butt. It is, but I got a week off work that FMLA denied, fun fact, because they did not provide enough. Basically, my doctor didn't get a good enough reason for me to be off work because an extra hole in your butt is not.
I guess an extra rectum didn't.
No.
Okay.
No. Still got to go to work. Still got to count money, even though I was. So they gave me hydrocodone, which makes me nauseous. And I was very much like, every time they were like, are you allergic to any medicine? No, but hydrocodone makes me nauseous. So then the doctor was like, cool, we're going to give you that. But then he was like, I'll give you this instead. So he gave me something for the nausea. Yeah, which I don't know how often I was awake that week, but from Tuesday to Friday, it had to have been a total of like 26 hours. It was not a lot. I slept a lot that week.
I don't blame you.
James has been awesome. He's been the one doing all the cleaning. So he's in charge of my butt.
Are you saying that because he's right there?
I mean, he is right there, but also, like, I'm not saying that just because he's right there. I'm saying that because I want him to keep doing it, and he's been great about it. He hasn't complained at all. We go to Walmart, and because they're like, here, use this. What was that stuff called that they cleaned it with?
What?
What was the stuff in the syringes that they gave us? They sent us home with a bunch of sodium chloride. Okay. And he went to Walmart looking specific, because they were like, this is what we're giving you, but you can just use tap water. And he was like, no, we need sodium chloride. Well, Walmart doesn't sell that. So we just got like wound wash. And
oh, okay.
It's great. It's healing up great. I go back to the doctor 2 more times this week because I find out if I have a blood issue. And then Friday I get to go back to my surgeon. So it's busy. I have a lot of appointments.
Your hematology appointment's already coming up?
Yeah, on Monday. Mm-hmm.
Which, you know what, I found out the other day, my family has a history of clotting issues, so.
Oh, which one?
I don't know. I have no idea. I just was told. When I went to the ultrasound appointment, my mom was like, mark that one as yes. I was like, who has clotting issues? Your grandma. What?
Oh, so I'm guessing it could be Von Willebrand's then, because that's what I'm waiting for. They know, my grandpa has hemophilia, A, and my cousin, my female cousin, has Von Willebrand's. Von Willebrand. I think it said brand, but my family says Braun, so that's what's stuck in my head. But yeah, I get to find out if I have that one, because she said they were able to do some in-house and some tests they had to send out. So she's like pretty confident that I don't have hemophilia. Lee definitely doesn't, so that's great, because we had to get him tested. But yeah. I'll find out about that. And so next week I will have updates on my blood and my butt.
If she remembers.
Yeah, if I remember. If I don't remember.
Oh, like, it won't be next week, guys. It'll be in 2 weeks.
That's true. Yeah.
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 Because of
our news is good news. We'll go with that.
Yeah, okay. Done.
But that's all I remember. So that's probably all that's going on.
Okay. You haven't sent me anything else about typos at work, so.
Yeah. That happened.
Thanks for
bringing it up. So moving right shalong.
Right shalong. And I don't... Do you have any other updates? Anything else?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. Well, then let's talk about socials.
Cool, let's go.
So socials, guys, we have them. We have X, Helen Hills Pod. I almost said Twitter, which is X. Instagram and Facebook, both Helen Hills Podcast. So we post our pictures there. Of all the cases, of all the pictures that we pull in. Our email's up and going, so if you have any requests, whatever you want, if you have something specific you want to hear, you can email us, hellandheelspodcast@gmail.com. Our Patreon's up, Linktree's up. Linktree, you can find all the links to all the things. You just Google Hell and Heels Podcast Linktree. We come right up. And then, if you do enjoy listening, make sure to tell your friends, family, whoever to listen as well, because that's how we can continue to grow. And then I think that's everything. And I'm ready for... I don't know if I'm ready for a story.
This one's really sad.
Okay, so I'm not ready for a story.
No, you're not.
Okay.
Yeah, this one... I mean, granted, I was pretty doped up, but this is a really sad one. So I'm just going to get right into it. This takes place in The Paw, Manitoba, Canada. It was November 1971 on Clearwater Lake. It's about 20 miles northeast of the Paw. 14-year-old Kenny Gerba, he had gone fishing with his father, and he kind of got bored, so he started looking for rabbit tracks in the woods, as one does. I don't know if he found any rabbit tracks, but I do know that he found the body of a woman wearing only rubber boots.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry, we're just jumping right in here. Kenny's father immediately called the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, who responded quickly to the absolutely brutal crime scene. The body had multiple stab wounds on the body and face. Her head was crushed in, believed to be kicked in specifically, and there was blood spatter around the body. Police also found what they believed to be the woman's clothes nearby and drag marks with two sets of footprints on either side as they were going to the scene and two sets leaving the scene.
So two people.
At least, yeah. They knew that there was at least two people and the victim. Due to the falling snow, they were unable to make a cast of the prints, but they were able to photograph them. They transported the body to a local hospital for identification before eventually moving it to Winnipeg to autopsy. Her face was so crushed that they were unable to identify her. But when they removed the boots, they found a tattoo on her ankle that said, "Cornelius Biggity, I truly love you no matter what."
Well, that's a very specific tattoo.
It really is. Like, if I ever get James's name tattooed on me, it will be first, last, and the third. I had to think about it. What's that thing that comes after? What do you call it? Like, first, third, junior?
The third?
There's, a name for it. I don't know. Anyway, the numbers. Like, I'll have to get his whole ass government name on there because that, I mean, it helped.
Are you talking about, like, the Roman numeral number?
Yeah, but there's, like, a name for it.
I don't know.
I don't either. I just see it on paperwork all the time. Where it's, like, first name, middle initial, last name.
Prefix.
Yeah, it is. It's, like, prefix. I guess it maybe is suffix. I don't know.
I would assume it's a suffix.
Yeah. But I don't know if that's... Whatever. Anyway, the numbers. They were able to match this tattoo with a recent missing persons report. So they were able to identify the body as 19-year-old Helen Betty Osborne. Betty was reported as not coming home by the couple that she had been staying with, and the husband identified the body and clothes at the scene as Betty's. So investigators start by finding Cornelius Biggity, and he was dating the victim. He lived on nearby Pukkatawagan Reserve. He was with her the night that she was murdered. They had been drinking. They got into an argument before they separated, and Betty went home. Police believed that Cornelius was hiding something from him, so they showed him pictures of the crime scene.
Okay.
And he was so upset he passed out. So they locked him in a cell. And when he woke up, after regaining consciousness, they gave him a polygraph test. He passed, and they ruled him out as a suspect.
This is Cornelius, right?
This is Cornelius, yes.
Okay, just making sure.
During the interrogation, they did learn that as she was, like, when they separated and she was walking home that night, she would have been walking home alone. Helen Betty Osborne. She went by Betty. She was born July 16th in 1952. She was the firstborn child of Justin and Joe Osborne. Her father was a fur trapper, and both parents and their 8 children lived in a log cabin. One source did say that they had 12 children, but most of them did say 8. Betty was born a First Nations Cree. They lived in the Norway House, or on the Norway House Reserve in northern Manitoba. In 1969, the education on the reserve only went up to grade 8. So if the students wanted to continue their reservation, their education, they had to leave the reservation and go to a nearby town, the Paw. And that is what Helen decided to do. So at the time,
that's why she's with the
right. She was staying with the couple.
Okay.
She was a high school student and she stayed with this couple near her school. A friend said that she was bright and funny, She was very interested in math. She was in a program at the Margaret Barber Collegiate. And this program helped integrate Indigenous students with white students in the PAW. And Betty left her family because she wanted to be a teacher. She wanted to give back to her community on the reservation. She wanted to go and get her education so later on she could come back and other students wouldn't have to leave anymore. She would spend weekends at the movies with Cornelius and her friends. I mean, she sounded like very much your normal teenage girl, just doing teenage girl things, going to school, hanging out. Investigators searched her room at the house and they were able to get fingerprints from a notebook. And they did use this notebook or this fingerprint to positively identify the body as Helen Betty Osborne. They started by canvassing streets, homes, bars. They asked if anybody had seen anything that night. And they ended up speaking to a cab driver who was out driving around, as cab drivers typically do. And he reported seeing something strange. It was a white or light blue car on the road. And they threw something out the window, which is already kind of impressive to me because I don't feel like I feel like even if I see that, it's not gonna stick in my mind.
Right.
But not only that, he remembered two numbers from the license plate on the car.
Okay, that's pretty impressive.
I thought so. But he remembered that the license plate had a 4 and a 2 in it. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police, they took dogs out to the highway to search where the cab driver reported seeing this happen, and they found a screwdriver and a piece of a woman's bra.
Okay.
The screwdriver was identified as a murder weapon. It was used to stab her in the face, and ooh, it punctured her skull and entered the brain.
Oh my God. How much anger do you have to puncture someone's skull?
That's, I mean, I got chills through this whole thing. And as I get to the end, like, it's only going to get more frustrating, doesn't feel like a strong enough word. Just absolutely
disgusting.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Oh, thank you very much. On November 17th, Betty's gruesome death made the front page of the news. And this caused panic because Indigenous people were already suffering from discrimination. And this is already an ongoing problem. And at the end, I will list some some statistics. But it obviously caused a panic. Indigenous parents started taking their children out of schools. First Nations girls who chose to stay in school were warned by parents and landlords to travel in pairs. You know, don't stay out too late at night. If you can, just don't go out at night. Just, I guess, don't be a person. Like, just stay live home.
Just live in fear.
Yeah, just live in fear. Quit your education because we can't trust anybody, apparently. During this time, Indigenous people were heavily prejudiced, as I mentioned. It was very common to just be out in public and be slurred, spit on, viewed as suspicious when they're not doing anything other than existing. Betty's peers, other Indigenous students, they were randomly pulled from school out of classes and interrogated. They were detained by police without consent from their parents.
Oh.
Because police were under the assumption that this crime had been committed by another First Nation student. And you know how sometimes in the cases we kind of hear that police, they turn to desperate measures sometimes when they're looking for a lead and they can't find one, or like with cold cases, like they'll call in psychics and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in an attempt to get a break in the case, they had the cab driver hypnotized.
Okay.
I'm not real sure how I feel about that. But it helped. actually. So that's good. He ended up remembering two more numbers of the license plate. So they have a total of four numbers now. 5, 3, 4, and 2. So police take all the information they've gotten from the cab driver, which, by the way, give this guy a medal. This leads them to a possible match on the car. It leads them to the Colgan family. They lived in the Paw, and they had a 67 Chrysler. So they start kind of investigating, and the Colgans have a son named Lee. And as they're looking into this, in May of 1972, Constable Don Knight gets a letter in the mail. So it's the next year. Don Knight, he gets a letter in the mail. It's an anonymous letter, but it has details of the murder of Betty that were not shared with the public. And this letter basically states that there was a girl sitting in a car outside of a party with Lee Colgan. And he not only confessed to murdering Betty, but gave details that only the killer would know. So they have the car, they have this letter. And this letter was eventually revealed to be written by a family member of the girl who sat in the car with Lee. Does that make sense? You follow me? Okay. So this girl is sitting in a car with Lee, and he tells her, hey, I did this horrible thing. And she tells a family member, I believe it was her cousin. And the cousin is the one that wrote this letter anonymously and sent it to the police.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Yeah. So it wasn't the girl, but she comes back later. This led police to four suspects, and it was Lee Colgan and his friends. Lee's friend and neighbor, James or Jim Halton, Norm Manger, who was a homeless drug addict. That's what literally every source said. And he's a shit person, so I don't care about saying that any nicer.
Okay.
And then there was also Dwayne Johnson at Johnston's, and he left town shortly after the murder. 7 months after Helen's murder, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police got a warrant to search the Colgan family car. And they found that Lee had washed the outside of the car. It was pretty clean. They didn't find anything. He did not wash the inside, like, at all. Like, I don't even think he tried. They found 114 hair fibers, four of them similar to the victims. They found fabric with metal clips on it, like you would find on a bra. And this was matched by a forensic lab to the piece that they found on the road. And they found blood in the car. This was before DNA, but the blood type was similar to Betty's. Due to the evidence that they collected, police were able to put Betty in the car, but they weren't able to tell who was there assaulting her. So they have evidence, but there's really not much that they can do with it.
There's evidence that someone that had access to that car was somehow involved.
Correct. They confront Lee with all this evidence, and immediately he gets a lawyer. He is like, you got to talk to Darcy Bancroft. And they're like, okay, this is his lawyer. And then they talk to the three other guys, Halton, Johnston, and Manger, and they tell police the same thing. You have to talk to Darcy Bancroft. Yeah, they all have the same lawyer, which, spoiler alert, you're not supposed to do that. But, and just this Darcy guy, he sounded interesting. I'd watched a documentary on this, and I highly recommend it. When police visited him at his home, he's obviously not going to cooperate either. Because, I mean, one, he doesn't have to. They do have all this evidence, yes, but they don't have enough to take this to court. So his lawyer was like, kick rocks. And they noticed while they were there, I just wanted to mention this, he had multiple big cats, including ocelots and a chameleon. Like, they said it was just like a zoo, his house.
I mean, I guess mine too. I shouldn't say anything.
I mean, I would have a chameleon, but I don't think I would have large wild cats in my house. I'm not Joe Exotic. I'm not going that far. So the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, they're not giving up. I'll give them that. They start following the suspects around town, the ones that are still in town. They start following them around. They install wiretaps on their phones. When they follow them to bars, the police actually send them screwdrivers, like the drink, to basically let them know, like, we know. We're on to you. And they went back and told their attorney, Darcy Bancroft, and he sent two letters to the Crown Attorney's office. The first one is basically telling them, stop it. Leave my clients alone.
Mm-hmm.
Stop harassing them. The second one says his clients are good, innocent people.
I'm going to call bullshit.
They're great, upstanding citizens. Stop sending them mixed drinks at the bar. So the case, it goes cold. And everybody just kind of continues on with their lives. Lee Colgan, he gets married. He moved to Alberta and then British Columbia. And he eventually divorces his wife. And during this divorce, there were allegations of abuse. Lee struggled with alcohol addiction. After the divorce, he lost custody of his kids when he threatened to kill his ex-wife.
Yeah, that kind of sounds like you should lose custody.
But he's a good, innocent person. He's fine.
He's not, but okay.
James Houghton, he also got married. He moved to Alberta. And he became a successful salesman. He was known as decent, caring, generous. And he helped his buddy Lee get a job. He's a great guy. Dwayne Johnston, he got married. He moved to British Columbia. And he had reportedly settled down, had a family. But he was a known associate of a local biker gang. And he was rumored to have killed a First Nations man in Manitoba. Norm Manger, he was still an alcoholic, still homeless, but now he lived in British Columbia. So these are all great guys. In 1984, over a decade after Betty's death, Officer Bob Urbanowski is the first person that has been assigned to this case full time. And he's the first of about 200 officers in 13 years. So people have been trying to work on this case during all this time. But
no one's been assigned directly to the case. I guess that's confusing to me.
Not since it went cold. No one was assigned full time. Like, they had it. But from my understanding, like, cold case detectives work on multiple cases at once sometimes.
Right.
No, they were like, you take this and run with it. And he was like, cool.
Okay.
And he ran with it. In June of 1985, Urbanowski placed an ad in the Apopka Times requesting help from the public in solving this case. And he got over 150 responses to this ad. And Urbanowski traveled to almost 50 cities from Vancouver to Toronto. He made almost 200 inquiries. He researched, like, every single one of these things.
Okay.
Andrea Wacharik, she saw the ad in the paper. She attended a party in 1972 when she was 14 years old. And she told Urbanowski that she heard Dwayne Johnston bragging at this party. He said, quote, I stabbed her. It felt great. They tore the car apart. We'll never get caught. And she agreed to take the stand and testify against him. Another person come forward, Sheriff Gerald Wilson. He ran into Colgan at the local Legion. He said it was about 1977 or 78. And he bought him a drink, knowing Colgan was an alcoholic now. He bought him a drink and he invited Colgan back to his place in the hopes that he would drunkenly confess to him. Which also, like, I don't know if I'm happy about that or, like, what are you doing? Because this is a sheriff and it's good for Betty, but, like, are you, I don't, is that allowed? Can you do that?
Hey, Dad, can you do that? Because I'm pretty sure. Probably not.
It has to be no, right? Like, he's drunk. How do we know that he didn't just lead him or something?
Yeah, I don't know.
Coerced confession? I don't know. But anyways, so the problem, or I guess another problem with this story is, according to Wilson, this happened in either 77 or 78. Like I said, he didn't come forward with this info until 1986. And Colgan did confess to him. But he just didn't tell anybody.
Maybe that's because he was drunk?
I have no idea. I don't know why you would go through that. Maybe they were both. But, yeah. A lot of things
struggling because it feels like maybe he knew, like, hey, I can't legally do this, but he did it. And then he could maybe, in his mind, maybe it's like, after he confesses to me, if he's drunk, I can then focus on finding evidence against him.
But isn't it like, isn't there like a see something, say something, hear something, say something? You're a cop. This guy just told you he murdered somebody. Like, you can't just keep that to yourself. Even if you can't prove it, I imagine you still have to tell somebody.
I don't know. I would think you would have to, but it's also Canada.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Podfather, how does that work here?
Hey, Dad. Tell us all about Canadian laws and how they Please. Work.
Yeah.
If you Research could get it,
let us know.
Yeah. Let us know if he was supposed to say something or if what he did was even legal.
Specifically in 77 and 86, please.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Shoot us an email. HelenHostPodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. Don't text me. Sorry. That's specifically for my dad, you know?
Or anybody else that might know.
Anyone can request or give us this information. I'm just telling my dad, email us, HelenHostPodcast@gmail.com, because I'm going to ignore any texts. Now I'm going to get a phone call and probably 1,000 texts. This is da-da-da-da-da. And I'm going to respond with, I'm sorry, but could you please email that to HelenHostPodcast@gmail.com?
Thanks. Obviously, I'm sure he'll follow directions. Yeah.
Yeah, so sure.
Urbanowski, he's got all this info and he's got these suspects. He's thinking that it's time to kind of start putting the pressure on him. And he chooses Lee Colgan specifically because he was an alcoholic. He viewed him as the weak link. He was arrested at his parents' house October 3rd, 1986 and charged with first degree murder. Lee told police that on the night of November 13th, 1971, Lee Colgan, Dwight Johnston, Norm Manger, and James Houghton were out drinking and cruising the town. They came across Betty walking home, and they pull her into the car. While she's in the car, they used fake names so Betty wouldn't be able to identify them. And
why use fake names if they're going to murder her?
I'll tell you.
Okay.
According to Lee, Norm was in the front passenger seat. James was driving. Lee and Dwight were in the back with Helen. They drive to James's cabin, but when they try to get Betty in the cabin, she wouldn't stop screaming and yelling, obviously. So they were afraid of attracting attention because people were nearby. Neighbors were, you know, hanging out, being neighbors, I don't know, doing stuff. So they forced her back into the car and they left to find a more secluded area. Investigators believe that they were originally going to rape Betty, but she fought them off. And that's when they decided to kill her.
James, not an excuse. Maybe instead, just don't do it. Just be like, sorry. Just goodbye.
Find a willing partner. There's an idea.
I mean, there's that. Yeah, that's a step before what I was thinking, you know?
Yeah.
Or maybe even better, just don't have bad intentions like that, you know?
Yeah. I like that one. Yeah, don't be a dick.
Yeah, yeah. Sounds right.
Johnston and Halton attacked Helen as Lee stayed in the car with a passed out Norm. That he, according to Lee, he was like drunk beyond. He was just blackout drunk. They stabbed her with a screwdriver well over 50 times. Her skull, cheekbones, and palate were broken. Her lungs were damaged, and one of her kidneys were torn. They kicked and beat her relentlessly, leaving extensive bruising on her body. And then they drove away and left her to die. They believed that they would get away with it because Betty was an Indigenous woman. And they thought nobody would care, basically.
Which is so sad.
Mm-hmm. Because she's... I don't understand that thought process. I don't want to. I'm not asking anyone to explain it to me. But on October 26, 1986, Dwayne Johnston was arrested in his home in Revelstone, British Columbia. And he was charged with first-degree murder. Lee Colgan and Dwayne Johnston were scheduled for a preliminary hearing. Minutes before this hearing, Lee was offered full immunity in exchange for testifying against Johnston. Colgan gave enough evidence to lead to the arrest of Jim Halton. He was arrested on March 15, 1987 at his friend's house. He was also charged with first-degree murder. 16 years after her daughter's murder, Justine Osborne heard about the arrests on the radio.
Oh my gosh, that makes my blood boil. Why wouldn't she be the first one notified?
I have absolutely no freaking idea, because months passed. Jim Halton was arrested in March. Dwayne Johnston was arrested in October. And Lee was also arrested in the beginning of October.
Lee, okay, which one is Lee? Was he the one that was hanging out in the car with the passed out person?
Yes.
Okay, just making sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, they had from October to March to call her and tell her. James Halton and Dwayne Johnston both pled not guilty at their trial in December 1987. The jury was contrived? What?
Confused?
The jury was...
conflicted?
It was these people. It was made up of? I lost the word. Sorry.
Consisted?
Consisted. Yeah, that's it. Sorry. The jury consisted of all white after 20 Indigenous people were excused.
But why?
I don't know. I do not have an answer for that question. I'm sorry. I looked, because, you know, a lot of times we can find reasons. I found none. So, okay. Lee Colgan, like I said, was immune for trading evidence for testimony. Norman Manger was not charged, even though he was in the car at the time, because he was not conscious. James Halton, he was acquitted because nobody testified against him, so they were able to place reasonable doubt in the jury. And Dwayne Johnston was found guilty of second-degree murder only because Andrea testified hearing him saying, "I stabbed her at the party." Second degree.
Well, is that because first-degree murder has to have, like, what's the word? motive, premeditated.
Oh, premeditation. Yeah. I assume so. I do get a little into that later. But part of Lee's testimony, like, he did say that night they were driving around looking for sex.
So he but they gave... weren't looking to murder someone. I think the premeditation is different in that case. Not to defend them, but that's I'm trying to figure out why it's...
I guess secondary. I'm thinking... Yeah.
You've got to think about the charges, which is murder.
They were premeditating rape, not murder, which is still just...
Disgusting and stupid. Awful.
This whole thing
could they be charged with premeditated or intent to rape? I think that'd be a good
idea. I think we need to start adding that, honestly.
I'm pretty sure in the U.S. there is... we just talked about it.
Yeah.
What the freak is his name? California one. Brock Turner. I think he was charged with intent to rape. I can look. But
intent to commit rape includes both intent to have sexual or unnatural intercourse with a child and intent to rape by force against one's will. So yes, that is a thing.
Okay. Well, this Brock Turner, which we haven't covered him, guys. He's a piece of shit. It was assault with intent to commit rape. Either way, still awful. Mm-hmm. I think it should be able to be tried for intent to rape.
Oh, I absolutely think so. I agree.
Especially since they're admitting to it.
Mm-hmm. Police were less than happy that they had four men and only one got convicted. 2 days after the trial, Manitoba Attorney General launched an investigation into Gerald Wilson, the sheriff, on why he did not reveal this confession. And he basically told them he thought the police already had that information.
He is the police.
Sheriff Gerald Wilson was demoted for withholding information.
Just demoted?
Yeah, they slapped him on his tiny little wrist.
I'm sorry. Just demoted?
Just demoted.
Which he should have been freaking fired. And probably, I feel like that should have been something he could have been charged with.
I feel like demotion for withholding information as a sheriff, that should be like, oh, I saw him take that Snickers bar, but I didn't say anything. Not, he told me he murdered a girl.
Yeah.
Ugh.
He's the one that was getting him drunk, right? The sheriff was getting him drunk?
Yeah. Are you ready for the next bullet?
No.
He was later reinstated after an arbitration hearing.
As sheriff?
Uh-huh. And they asked him at this hearing, would you have gone to the police earlier if this was your neighbor's daughter? And what they meant by this was...
If it wasn't
an indigenous, person, would you have gone to the police earlier? And he said he probably would have.
He is the police!
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I try to justify for him, but...
This is so infuriating. I hate this case. Dwayne Johnston, he was eligible for parole after 7 years of his sentence.
Not long enough.
He was granted day parole. 200 people protested this by marching 800 kilometers, and they revoked this day parole.
Good.
Afterwards, Johnston claimed he was innocent, and he identified Houghton as the murderer, and he made a pact. He says they made a pact with everybody, so they took turns stabbing the body so nobody could talk about the murder.
Two of them were in the car.
Mm-hmm. There was only two sets of footprints.
I was about to say there were only two sets of footprints as well.
Yes.
So
maybe they step specifically in each other's footprint.
But I think they can see that because their feet may not be the exact same size.
Oh, they absolutely can't. Like, even if they put on each other's shoes, there's no way to not have overlap.
Maybe they piggyback ride, two of them.
Oh, you know what? That's actually a good idea, because then even the footprints would be, you would seem like you were heavier than what you were.
Uh-huh.
Let's stop giving people ideas.
Okay. Well, here's the thing is, if they had done piggyback rides, she would have gotten away.
True. Yeah.
So they should have done piggyback rides, so she could have gotten away. So
she could have lived.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it would have been not just four disgusting teenagers and four stupid teenagers, and it was two each in a trench coat on each other's shoulders, she could have lived.
Shoulders? Yeah.
Shoulders, yeah.
They should have been doing that.
They should have. Because they...
She'd be a teacher right now. She'd be fine.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be talking about her.
To her community. The Aboriginal Justice Implementation Commission launched an investigation into the case and how long it took to resolve it. Darcy Bancroft, these are their findings. And this is basically what they were like, why? Darcy Bancroft was allowed to represent all four suspects from the very beginning. They all went to him and he was like, come into my office. This is fine. It's not fine. Hey, look, you hold the chameleon. You hold my ocelot. Tell me what happened. Don't talk to anybody.
Don't make eye contact with the ocelot. It might bite you.
Yeah. I wish it would have bit off his penis. So they found his that this
schlong,
was...
Thank you. His schlong.
Oh, excuse me. The schlong. They found that this was a breach of professional ethics. They said that he should have only represented Colgan and told the other boys to find a different lawyer. The commission concluded that the most significant factors prolonging this case from being solved were racism, sexism, and indifference of white people. Betty Osborne, she was a smart girl with a bright future. She struggled leaving her home to pursue school because she left everybody she knew. She left her family,
her friends,
comfort. I was going to say at 19, no, in high school, you start high school at what, 15, 14? Something around in there? She was so determined to be a school teacher so other First Nations children wouldn't have to leave their family to continue their education. She was buried in Norway House with a simple wooden cross. Gord McIntosh, Manitoba Minister of Justice, issued a formal apology on July 14th, 2000. He addressed the failure of the justice system in Betty's case and created a scholarship in her name for Aboriginal women. Her hometown of Norway House named a school after her to honor her memory. And I wanted to comment, too, on the crisis in Canada. There's a hashtag right now. I know I saw it used as soon as yesterday. On Twitter of MMIWG number 2 SK, which stands for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, Girls, and Two-Spirit, which I really like. I had never heard that term. According to IHS.org, traditionally Native American Two-Spirit people were male, female, sometimes intersexed. In most tribes, they are considered neither man nor woman. So it sounds kind of like a non-binary person.
Yeah, but it's still, I think, a little bit different. It's more of a spiritual level, I understood it.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. Non-binary is like the closest reference I could find it to, but it's like it has a deeper meaning. I don't know. I hope I'm not offending anybody.
I think it's more because it's so, first of all, it's in Indigenous people's beliefs. Like, I think it's a very different, it's an older mindset. And it's, I guess for me, it's more set in more of a religious aspect for Two-Spirit people.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
Rather than like an identity aspect.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You explained it way better than I did. Thank you.
That's how I understand it, but just me.
This is an ongoing crisis that Native American and Indigenous people have to deal with, especially women and girls. Between 2009 and 2021, the rate of homicide against First Nations, I think it's Métis and Inuit women and girls, was 6 times higher than the non-Indigenous women and girls. 81% of Indigenous women and girls were killed by someone they knew, 35% by an intimate partner, 24% by an acquaintance, 22% by a family member, And in 86% of cases, the person accused was also Indigenous. Accused, by the way, not convicted. Yes, thank you. Police were found to be less likely to recommend a first-degree murder charge when the victim was Indigenous 27% of the time compared to 54% of times when the victim was not. When homicide trials of Indigenous women and girls went to court, manslaughter charges were twice as common when the victim was Indigenous than when they weren't. And this was 41% versus 20%. Between 2009 and 2021, 490 Indigenous women and girls were victims of homicide. This translates to 4.27 per 100,000 women and girls. And this is a rate of 6 times higher than non-Indigenous women and girls.
Significantly higher.
Oh, yes. It's disgustingly higher. At a time when Indigenous women and girls made up between 2 to 3% of the population, they represented between 5 and 7% of homicide victims. And I just wanted to talk about that. I don't think we've ever talked about that on the podcast. I've heard, unfortunately, a lot of these types of statistics in not just Canada. These were Canadian statistics, but this happens in the US as well.
Mm-hmm. I think I might have touched on it very briefly. I didn't go into the depth you did. With Robert Picton.
Mm-hmm. I know you mentioned that earlier. I think you did.
I don't know how in depth I went, or I honestly don't remember. I remember reading about it, I should say, but I don't know if I put a lot of emphasis on it just because that was already such a big story.
It is a very, I'll call it a very well-known issue. Mm-hmm. I think it is not a well-represented issue.
Right.
So I just wanted to add those statistics in at the end. Okay. And unfortunately, the only photo of these dirtbags that I could find was of Lee Colgan, which just pissed me off even more because I wanted to put their big stupid faces out there.
Yeah, it makes me mad when we can't find pictures of them.
Mm-hmm. There are pictures of them in the documentary, but I didn't want to screen grab a documentary and put that up here. And there's a ton of documentaries. There's books written about Betty.
Okay, that made me very upset, but I think I've heard, I shouldn't say that. I recognize the one picture of the one guy.
Lee Colgan?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is like a really high profile case, I guess. Unfortunately, high profile after the fact. But
right. Okay, well, do you want to talk about not a murder?
Please.
Okay, cool. So I was going to do a story that contained cryptids, but we've been doing a lot of cryptids lately.
Yeah, I feel that.
I think we both have talked about it where we're like, oh, we've done a lot. We love mm-hmm. cryptids, though. We're cryptid girlies.
Yeah, for so sure.
So I was like, I'm going to push this story out another week just so that we have a little bit of a break. Bless you. Amanda's giving me a weird look.
Thank you. Can't unmute. I pressed it like 16 times. What do you want from me? I didn't want to sneeze in all of your ears.
Anyway, yeah, she sneezed. So I decided to push off my cryptid story one more week, though I think you guys are going to like it. Cody said he would listen to that story, by the way, when I do it. So like,
but just that story. So he'll fast forward through my true crime.
Uh-huh. Which I don't know why. I'm like, why don't I just tell you about it?
Yeah. Like, why don't you just sit over here when I'm talking about it?
Yeah. Anyways, point is that he's like, I want to listen to that one. Okay, whatever. Cody likes... He doesn't like the true crime paranormal stories because he likes like Joe Rogan podcasts. Anyway, okay. That's not the point of this, okay?
Yeah.
Then I was going to do a haunting and I was like, hauntings don't sound like fun today. I don't want to talk about mm-hmm. a ghost. And so instead I was like, well, let's talk about a game.
Let's go. Okay.
Amanda loves the game. I know she does.
I love when you do these. I have actually considered doing them. And I'm like, no, I want to hear Bryce talk about it.
It's just because you love them so much. And I know you love them.
Yes. I love them so much because I don't understand anybody in their right mind that would do this.
I mean, I don't understand it either. I'm just here to tell you about it.
Yes. So light as a feather, stiff as a board. I'll do that one. Done that one. I'll do it again. Let's go. I don't even know what this is, but I'm not doing it.
Don't remind my dad that we've done light as a feather, stiff as a board, because I'm probably still in trouble for that.
I'll do it right now.
Okay. With Lee, I assume?
With Lee and James, yeah.
Okay, done.
Ooh, or the dog. The dog weighs a lot of Lee's, so we'll use him.
Oh, okay, perfect. So we are going to do a game. It does not include... So it's kind of like a sleepover game, so it's not light as a feather, stiff as a board. But it's more along the lines of light as a feather, stiff as a board.
Okay.
Less risky, for the most part, or according to most sources.
Oh, okay. So, wait, light as a feather, stiff as a board is risky?
Well, like...
Like no injury? Demons. Oh.
Yeah. Like, if you're thinking about a paranormal game, okay, like, the level of risk, light as a feather, stiff as a board is way down there, right? This is...
Yeah.
This is also... It might be a little higher risk, and I actually have two versions of this game.
Okay, I got you. I was like, what is less than light as a feather? I see what you, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
I hope everyone else is too. Anyways, so we're going to talk about the Sandman ritual.
Ooh.
There might be more versions. There is another Sandman game. I did not cover that one. Okay.
Okay.
But this is a multiplayer game, guys. You can get your buds together. You can do this little sleepover. Okay. You guys can play light as a feather, stiff as a board, followed by Sandman ritual, followed by whatever else you want to do. Party it up.
Okay.
So, guys, multiplayer. Now, in this game, though, you need one person who's going to act as the storyteller and one person who will act as, like, the sleeper. And then everyone else...
Wait, do I actually get to sleep?
No. Everyone else is a bystander. And they are just watching, okay? I mean, you can take turns and start rotating in and out who's storyteller, who's sleeper, and stuff like that. But you only technically need two people to play.
Okay.
So, playing field, a dark and quiet room. You don't need much. It's a dark, quiet room. Now, the tools required, a pillow. Most sources listed this as optional, but I'm going to say it's required for the sleeper's comfort.
Fair? Like, what?
And then also candles, which were also optional.
Damn it. Always the candles in the dark on the floor.
Hold on. This one did allow for flameless candles.
Ooh, okay. Okay.
So, yeah. So you can either do a normal candle or a flameless candle. I'm just telling you. Candles, and obviously if you do a traditional with a wick, you gotta get something to light that with, either a match or a lighter.
Or another candle.
But then you have to light that candle.
You can light it earlier.
That's fine, I'm just saying you have to be able to light your shit.
Yeah, okay.
So, good news on this game, no time restrictions. You can do this anytime you want. Middle of the day? Yeah.
Oh, okay. Hold on. I might do this game.
Probably shouldn't.
Okay.
We'll talk about why towards the end of this version. And like I said, I found two versions. This one's the spookier version. The other one is less spooky, I guess. Anyways, we'll talk about
it. So we have a PG-13 and an R.
I might go lower. I might say like G and... I might say PG and PG-13.
Okay.
Anyways, the good news, like I said, is anytime. You don't have to wake up in the middle of the night. You don't have to set alarms. You don't have to do anything at a specific time at 3 a.m. None of that, okay? None of that. You also don't have a time limit. For the most part, some sources, you don't have a time limit. I'll talk about that time limit in a minute. Well, I'll talk about the time limit way later on. Now, to start the game, get everyone in the dark room. You got to make sure it's dark, block out the windows, put the curtains up. Just make sure light sources are covered, okay?
Okay.
Also, make sure that anyone that does not go into the room knows not to disturb you. So if you're doing like sleepover, tell your mom and dad they're lame and hope they leave you alone, right?
Losers. Okay.
Losers. We're going to the basement to play the Sandman game.
Here, mom and dad, here's some tax documents. Go have a party.
Or maybe you compliment them and be like, mom, dad, you guys are the coolest. Come play this game with us.
Oh, then I'm going to be like, no, loser.
Exactly.
I'm going to watch a scary movie with your dad.
You need mommy and daddy to have fun? No, thank you. Go be social on your own.
Actually, you go do whatever you want so I can eat the hidden snacks that I have and drink alcohol.
Maybe that's what you do. Say, mom, dad, we're going downstairs or we're going to my room. It's booze time, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
You get your booze, we'll do our booze. Everybody's happy.
It's just a different type of booze, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So in this dark room, you need to make sure there's space on the floor for the sleeper to lie down flat and comfortably. And then if you're opting to use candles, you're going to set them around the perimeter of the room. But use some common sense, guys. Make sure you're not going to light anything on fire if you're using a traditional wick candle. I don't know how many times we can say this. Use some common sense, okay? Or even better common sense, use some flameless candles and just turn those on. It's like mood lighting. You're good.
Or a flashlight? Can you use that?
No flashlights.
Oh, don't use a flashlight.
Don't listen to Amanda. She doesn't know the rules.
I don't, because I'm not listening. I keep talking.
So, like I said, you're going to make sure there's plenty of space for the sleeper to lie down comfortably. Put the pillow on the floor. I know it says it's optional, but like, I don't feel like a pillow should be optional.
No, I agree with that.
So, I mean, I guess maybe it depends on the sleeper. I don't know. But the sleeper, they are going to lie on the floor and they're going to be on their back, head on the pillow. They are not allowed to cross any limbs. So they can't have like their hands crossed over their chest or their legs crossed. Hands down by side, legs straight out.
Okay.
The storyteller, they need to be able to walk all the way around the sleeper. They need to walk full around. So
okay.
They'll start by positioning themselves just kind of near the sleeper. Some say just stand, others say kneel. I'm going to say kneel because what you're going to have to do as a storyteller is a lot of bending, okay? And they need to be able to touch the sleeper.
Okay.
You're out as the sleeper already. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Great. They're touching my shoulders, aren't they?
Well, I'll talk about it. So, like I said, this storyteller needs to be able to get all the way around. So the bystanders, they're just going to be kind of on the outskirts. They can be in a circle, but they have to give the storyteller enough room. And they're really, the bystanders are just going to watch. They need to be out of the way and they can watch. They are not allowed to speak through the duration of this. And they're not allowed to leave through the duration of it. And they're not allowed to move once they start.
So everybody go to the bathroom before we start the damn game.
Right. Now you can take breaks like between sleepers, but not during this like sleeper. So like if you're the sleeper, we have to finish you and then we can go on like potty break and then do someone else.
Okay.
So once everyone's in position, sleeper, you're going to close your eyes. And this is where the storyteller, they have their moment to shine. Okay. Because the storyteller is going to start telling a story to the sleeper. Doesn't matter. During the story, the sleeper has to listen with their eyes closed. And the story is about the sleeper. Now, the story, it can be whatever. It can be whatever the storyteller decides. There's just a couple details that have to be the main event of the story. In the storyteller's tale, the main event must involve the sleeper being sliced open, filled with sand, then closed up again. Main event of your story, okay? So anything beforehand, that's, you can make it up. It can be unicorns, Narnia, whatever you want, okay? But it has to lead up to you being cut open, you as a sleeper being cut open, filled with sand, and sewn back up.
Okay. I forgot this was a scary game for a minute. And then you said that and I was like, oh, okay. We're back. All right.
We're back. Yeah. So now while this storyteller is going through the story, they also have a couple actions they have to do. While the storyteller is telling of the sleeper being sliced open, they have a little bit of an action they have to take. And while describing the sleeper being sliced open, the storyteller has to run a finger along each of the sleeper's limbs as they describe that limb or body part being cut open.
Yeah, I hate this.
Don't touch me. You would.
Okay.
Now, it's not clear if they have to go in a certain order, if they have to go legs, arms, feet, torso, whatever. But a lot of versions state you have to end at the sleeper's forehead.
Okay.
But I'm not sure if that's across or up and down, like to the nose.
Yeah.
It just says end at their forehead. Okay.
Okay.
So essentially what you're doing as a storyteller is your finger is emulating a knife and using like a slicing motion.
Are you hurting them or are you just
No. You're just soft. You don't have to hurt them. Don't take this as an opportunity to actually scratch your friend there. Okay. They are focused on your story.
Gotcha.
But they're just not moving. And sleeper, you're really not allowed to do anything. You just gotta lay calmly as you can. You're not supposed to flinch. Don't flinch, okay?
Okay.
Don't speak. Just keep listening to the story intently about you being sliced open, okay? Now, the storyteller, they've narrated you being sliced open, and they've also emulated slicing you open. Now they get to pretend to fill you with sand. So, as they tell of you being filled with sand, the storyteller will then press their hands firmly on each of the sleeper's limbs. So, they go up and down the leg, the sleeper's limbs, like they're packing sand in. Okay. And then they finish at the forehead, if that's the rules you're going by.
Okay. I'm with you.
Now, the idea, like I said, is that the pressure is the sand that you're packing into their body. Okay?
Okay.
Now, as the storyteller finishes that, they're going to go back through, and as they're narrating sewing up the sleeper, they're going to pinch their fingers gently on the sleeper's limbs. Don't take this as that chance to be like, Amanda over here, that bitch, she took my lunch money today, or whatever it is. I don't know.
Why are you at a sleepover with someone who took your lunch money? First of all.
If it's a sibling.
Get a new friend. Oh. bold of you to assume I played games with my siblings. We didn't get along.
I was actually thinking a different name, but I looked at you and it came out Amanda.
I don't know if I should be flattered or... The only game I played with my siblings was when my brother held me down and did like the spit thing where you try to spit and then suck it back up, but gross. He couldn't do it. Yeah.
So you just got spit on?
Yeah.
Okay.
And people wonder why I don't like being touched or anything is because all my life I had to fight
that's germs. Fine. Listen, this is all I'm trying to say is this is not your chance, okay?
Okay.
This is not your chance to pinch someone as hard as you can. You have to gently do it, okay? So you're going to follow the same process as before, up and down, pinching their arms as you're telling of them being sewn up and their legs and whatever. Like, this is to emulate the sleeper being sewn up with a needle and thread, right? Like the pinching feeling.
Okay, yeah.
So, sleeper, you're going to just remain calm still at this point because your torment is coming to an end. So the storyteller, after that, they're going to end their story. And when they do, they will tell the sleeper to open their eyes. So the sleeper, open your eyes, but you're going to remain still. And then the storyteller will have you stand up. Now the sleeper may stand up, or in most cases, you may try to stand up. In most cases, the sleeper at this point is often not able to get up. It should feel like their limbs are full of sand.
Okay, this sounds kind of fun. It sounds
like the opposite of light as a feather, stiff as a board.
Oh, it is the opposite, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds fun, but at the same time, like part of me, when Annie gets old enough to have sleepovers, I was going to say have friends. She can have friends now. I don't care.
She can't have friends.
When she gets old enough to have sleepovers, I want to tell her this game along with like Bloody Mary and Light as a Feather. But also, if we don't have a basement, but in my mind, in this story, we have a basement. I don't know. If she's having a sleepover, and I go downstairs, and there are six girls standing quietly around another girl talking about sewing up a child lying flat on the floor, I'm leaving.
You're like, I'm out. I didn't want to see
it. Yeah. Like, there, that, And all they have around them is candles, real or fake. I don't know. I'm gone. You know what? Whatever's happening here, not my business. If you want some Hot Pockets, though, they're on the bar.
The what are they? The little pizza roll things?
Yeah,
what are they called?
Pizza rolls?
Are they pizza rolls?
Aren't they pizza rolls?
I thought
there's pizza rolls and there's bagel bites.
I don't know. They're probably I'm probably trying to think of the brand.
Pizza rolls?
The little like pizza pocket things that are like maybe an inch big.
Heifer, it's pizza rolls.
But I'm trying to think of the brand.
I thought the brand was pizza rolls.
I don't think so.
Tostitos?
Tostitos is chips, isn't it?
No, there's Tostitos and there's Tostinos.
This is Totino's pizza rolls.
That's a okay.
Totino. I was trying to think of the brand. I knew it started with a T.
Okay. I don't know. I've just always known them. You got pizza rolls. You've got Great Value pizza rolls, and then you got pizza rolls.
You got the Totinos, because those are the good ones. Okay. That's not the point. Okay, we're way off track already. Yeah,
sorry. Okay.
I don't even know why we're talking about Totinos.
Because my child's doing, my child's, like, sewing up her friend in the basement.
Gotcha.
But when you're done, there's cheese puffs and pizza rolls on the counter. And just don't get sand on my damn floor. I left the beach. Get that shit out of here.
Yeah. Okay, that's right. So this sensation of you feeling like your limbs are full of sand should pass. Reality, most of the time, it's just a trick of the mind, right? You're starting to relax. Your brain can play tricks on you. Your limbs are not actually filled with sand, I hope. Your mind has just convinced itself it is. Though, there are some versions that state if you are the sleeper and you're unable to stand on your own, you will be possessed by a demonic spirit.
Okay, hold, stop. What?
Yep. So, basically, if you don't stand on your own in time, there's a spirit, a demonic spirit, that will live in your mind forever. The feeling of the sand in your limbs would be like the Sandman or the demon taking over your body, and you standing up is shaking that feeling so that, you know, the sand doesn't feel like it's there anymore. That's essentially how you shake off the demon.
Okay. And if not, you just get crippling depression for the rest
you
of
just,
your life?
You get a mind demon.
I think I have that.
You know, it doesn't really tell me what this demon does. It just says you get a mind demon. So, take that with a grain of salt.
I don't like it, because, like, a demon that's not in your mind can really fuck with you and your surroundings and everything else. So, like, one that is in my mind, I don't want to know what he can do.
And it was all because you couldn't stand up in time. But it doesn't tell me a time limit. Just you didn't stand up in time, on your own, unassisted. Okay.
I changed my mind. I'm about to be 34 years old. I don't want to play this game anymore. I can't stand up in time. Even if I have to go to the bathroom, I can't stand up fast.
I just keep thinking right now, I can't stand up. Half the time I'm like, Cody, help me up.
And no one can help you. Yeah, no, I don't like this game. Can I grunt when I stand up? Can I still do the...
Yeah, that's fine. There's no rules against it.
Okay, then that might help me out.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's the first version. That's the, I guess, the darker version. But I do have another version. And I only found this in one source, but I did like it. So I was like, thank you, we're doing this.
Okay.
So I'm just sharing what scarystudies.com has documented for the Sandman game. For the most part, in the version, the playing field and the materials are the same. You need a quiet room. But in Scary Studies, they're like, it should be comfortable. Make it a comfortable room.
I like that website.
Yeah. Yeah. So they add blankets or sleeping bags for each player as well. And they also are like, you need pillows to make sure you're comfy.
Okay.
And they also want it to be a dimly lit room. You need some mood lighting.
Oh, okay.
So can be dimly lit or you can use candles. They don't care what type of candles in this one.
Just set the mood.
What they're trying to do is create a relaxing or like a calming environment.
Okay. They're trying to really get in your head.
And well, on this one, they also let multiple people play at once. So you can have multiple
sleepers.
But that's because it's still very different.
Do you still only have one storyteller for multiple people?
Well, we'll talk about that because the role's a little bit different.
Okay.
So in this one, you also have to have, I shouldn't say have to, they recommend a quiet or calming set of music. Get that calming playlist going. They mentioned specifically nature sounds to help people relax.
Boy, they really want me to fall asleep, even though they're telling me I can't fall asleep.
This is more of a meditative one, right? So okay. It's less demonic, more meditative. And this one's more positive than the other one. Like, there's no demons involved in this one.
Okay.
But I wonder, because when I'm out in nature, maybe this is because I take my dogs, it's not relaxing because all I hear is them barking. So is it like rainfall with dogs barking in the background, or is it just the rainfall?
Which one is relaxing to you?
Neither.
Do you like the dogs barking? Oh, neither. No. I feel like rainfall would just make me have to use the bathroom.
Okay, well, point is that was just one example. They didn't say it had to be nature sounds. They just said that was like an example. Now, like I said, in this version, everyone can play it once. Instead of a storyteller, you kind of have like a lead person. I call them the principal person going throughout the rest of this. They're going to lead the way. So everyone, they can now lay down on their blanket, sleeping bag, pillow, and get comfortable. And in this version, they state that it is important that all players are in a positive state of mind. Yeah, and no one should be forced to play if they're feeling uneasy for any reason. You need to be in a positive state of mind. They also recommend before beginning, everyone should turn off all electronic devices or anything aside from the mood lighting that could emit light. Should be put away. Now, the music sound effects should be playing in the background. Everyone participating, really just like get it cozy in your sleeping bag, get under your blankets, get warm and comfy, put a blanket on, get to the point where you're able to get into a deep state of relaxation. Now, everyone that's laying down, that is participating, they should close their eyes and begin to take slow, deep breaths. The leader of this game, or the principal, they're going to guide everyone through. They're literally going to do a guided meditation. And while they're doing this, they're going to focus on getting the players to clear their minds and just focus on their breathing, relax, and get us, into a very deep relaxation. So this is meant to help relax the body, calm the mind, and it's meant to allow for the players to visualize a peaceful or like a safe environment for them.
Okay.
Now, once all of the players appear to be in the right state of relaxation, the right state of mind, the principal, they're going to tell them, all right, it's time to visualize a staircase. And this staircase is going to lead down to a door. Players should then visualize walking down the stairs and opening the door. And they should continue, like, this should still be calm and relaxing visuals for them. So when they open the door, hypothetically, they should be seeing themselves entering somewhere they would consider peaceful. They use the example, a garden, a forest, a beach, whatever it is that you find relaxing, a peaceful meadow, whatever it is. Now, once all of the players are in their peaceful place, the principal person will have them look for the Sandman in their area. Many will describe seeing it as a figure or as an object. Like, some said it was a cloud. Others said it was a feather. Some said it was like a token. Some said it was a being. Look for the Sandman.
Interesting.
Once you've identified the Sandman, the players are then free to ask him a question or make a wish. And the Sandman should answer their question or grant the wish. And once everyone has had their chance, spoken with the Sandman in their meditative state, the principal will tell everyone to thank the Sandman because manners.
Yeah, fair. Okay.
And then the principal will guide the players back up the stairs, make sure the door is closed behind them, and they can begin to open their eyes and they can freely discuss their experience. So this version is more meditative. It is a meditation. And this one doesn't associate any risks to playing. Like, they don't talk about potential risks of being possessed.
And check. So, okay, that's a good, that's
yes, this is much calmer. There's no talk of being sewn up or filled with sand. It's just talking to the Sandman in this version. So I did want to include this. Like I said, I only found the one source with this version. I don't know if there's other sources I could have found, but the 30 pages I had up about the Sandman game were all about the other version. So,
okay.
But those are the two versions of the Sandman game. that I am sharing.
I kind of like the second one. I feel like that's like, okay.
Relaxing.
It is. It does sound relaxed. Hell, I was relaxed just listening to what you're supposed to do.
To me, that one's more like you're clearing your mind and then you're like presenting your questions or your wish to yourself and your inner peace. Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And like the Sandman is just the representation they're using.
I like that one. I'm still confused on where the PG-13 one is because I don't feel like unintentionally summoning a demon to follow you for the rest of your life would be PG-13.
Are you thinking that'd be more R?
Yeah. And by PG, I mean Paranormal Game. So we have here Paranormal Game and Paranormal Game 13. R. Yeah, not 13.
Oh. I'm just, okay, listen, the reason I said 13 is because not all sources said you were summoning a demon to your mind.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay, I'm with you now.
That's why I was like PG-13. And then like the other one, the second one is definitely PG.
Well, I think in PG-13 movies, you can drop like one F-bomb. So, okay, I can see this since it's only one source summoning a demon. I think, well, okay.
There were multiple sources summoning a demon. It's just there were also multiple sources that were like, it's just a trick of the mind.
Okay. Okay. I'll allow a PG-13 then.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor, for allowing my arguments on this. As she slams the milk bottle down as her gavel.
That's my gavel.
So, well, that's what I had. I just wanted to do something. I thought it was fun because I was like, wow, these are two very opposite versions.
Yeah, that was night and day.
Really, though. And like I said, the one, all of the details, I pulled the information from the one source, which was, I have it in here. I don't know where. somestudy.com. Spooky study?
And this is for the relaxing one?
Yeah, the relaxing one was scarystudies.com.
Gosh.
I don't know why it's on scarystudies.com.
That sounds like lovelystudies.com.
I know,
like,
right?
This just, I don't know. I was waiting on it to go sideways, and it was just like, oh, okay, meet the Sandman. Oh, he grants you a wrist. Okay, well.
And maybe what it is they're studying, and that one's really a trick. They're like, please do this and see what happens, see what follows you home. I don't know. I'm just saying the meditative one seemed pretty chill.
Maybe that's the one where you get the demon of the mind, and the demon is that he never grants your wish.
Or answers your question truthfully.
Or answers your question, yeah. And you're left the rest of your life being like, I bet that son of a bitch lied to me.
And then you're going to be, what the hell is this dog doing behind me? Anyways.
I've been laughing at her. Yeah, because Cody's jacket fell off the chair a little bit ago, and now it's hers. It's her blanket.
Mm-hmm. She's got a bone. Anyways, yeah. So, I don't know. Like I said, I only found the second version on scarystudies.com. Obviously, this is not word for word. I've rephrased it. Simplified some of it because they were very into the relaxation. It was like everything was like, make sure it's relaxing, make sure they're comfortable, make sure it's calming. And I'm like, fuck that. Screw that. They're gonna get it after I say it the first time. Just make it relaxing, okay?
So basically, according to that website, I need to schedule a massage and let them get the room ready and then tell them to get out. I have to play a game instead.
Well, you need someone to guide you through the meditation. So you have to have someone do the guided meditation.
So schedule a double massage.
Yeah. He's doing the guided meditation for you, though.
And tell the masseuses to get out. I don't know, whoever I bring with me. Like, leave the humidifier. I don't want him scheduling me. No, that's not going to be relaxing. No.
I don't know who you're taking with you. Annie?
If he's not going to be relaxed, then she sure as shit ain't. What? That child could not sit still if I paid her in chocolate truffles.
Well, that's because you're paying her in chocolate truffles.
No, like, if I was like, if you could... Okay, you know the game that went around on TikTok for a while back where they like, give their child chocolate and they're like, don't eat it until mommy comes back. Mm-hmm. That chocolate's gone.
I can't help you there.
As soon as I turn my back. Matter of fact, I'm still looking at her. The chocolate's not even unwrapped, and it's down the gullet.
Yeah, I was going to say, you probably haven't even turned away. You haven't even gotten the sentence out, and it's gone.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I can't help you there. All right, well, I'm glad you liked that one, because it was oddly relaxing to research. At least the second part was. I don't...
You know, I didn't start yawning until after that second part, so it was... Yeah. Maybe I need to go talk to the Sandman.
Listen, I'm also going to, I think I'm going to claim the Sandman as a story or as a topic as a whole. Because one of the sources I read had a lot of details about the Sandman themselves and their origin, but I didn't include it because that's a whole different story.
I like that idea.
So, the idea of me claiming it or of us doing a story on it?
Either or. Oh, both. Okay. Yeah, that never occurred to me to do a story on the Sandman. I don't know why.
I'm just here telling you what I'm planning to do.
Okay.
As long as we're on the same page.
I look forward to hearing it next year.
I look forward to hearing it when I feel like doing it. At least I'm honest with myself. All right. Well, thank you all for listening to Hell on Heels Podcast. To see pictures from this episode, you can follow us on Instagram, Hell on Heels Podcast, X Hell on Heels Pod, or Facebook Hell on Heels Podcast. You can find us on Linktree by typing in Hell on Heels Podcast. Linktree, if you want to support us, please like, review, rate, share, and subscribe on your preferred listening platforms. If you want to take your support one step further so we can create additional content for you, you can donate through Patreon, where we're working to release specials for our patrons. If you have your own true crime or paranormal story suggestions or just words of encouragement, please email us at hellonheelspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening. Be sure to tell your friends to listen as well. Bye.
Bye.